This is RSVNB Update, episode 611, recorded Thursday, March 23rd, 2017. The Courage is Lit. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of RSVNB Update. Siriana and I are here, as per usual, this week to discuss some of the changes for good and a little bit shocking coming to RS this week, among other things, in one of the non-headlining update weeks of the month, I think, is that's what we can call this week, right?
I mean, the news post title includes ARC, so I'm pretty sure that we know where we can go this episode.
Yeah, I'm brought back to the time when we discussed the ARC and how troubling that was to the both of us. So, but yeah, maybe they did something that we are happy about this week. So we'll just have to wait and see on that. But anyways, aside from that, I got some good listener questions and also a look into another game at something that wouldn't happen in RuneScape. So stay tuned for that in just a bit. So let's begin with another community event, the Agents of Fury event. Okay, so this is another one of these events where you get the little trinkets by skilling and or maybe on Treasure Hunter or purchasing them with rune coins. You get 1,000 of them per day. You have until April 2nd to collect Zamorakian emblems this time. And then you can unlock the cosmetic rewards, including the Fury's Agent outfit, complete with horns and wings. So you and I talked about this last time they had one of these, and, you know, it just seems like these are one carbon copy event after another.
I think I can describe this update in one word, and that's lazy, and I think we can move on pretty much. I mean, there's nothing new to
it. Yeah, I mean, aside from a cosmetic, we're getting nothing out of this. It's clearly just content filler, which, I mean, is okay, but at the same time, I think there are people out there who are feeling compelled to play just to unlock these cosmetics for this.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to update, like, I always want to finish these kind of things. Like, I'm one of those people that just doesn't want to miss out, but then they made the drop rate of these things so that you have to play 2 hours or so every day to get, like, a reasonable amount of those points or tokens or whatever the update has, and I just don't have that time to spend on the game, so I just play normally and just try to be happy with the mystery boxes I get.
Yeah.
But
Did you get anything good from the mystery boxes yet this time?
I have said many, many times that I just, why is there this obsession with having to have something to play? Like, why can't I just play the game without anything new coming my way every week? And I think this is really something that Jagex needs to figure out. Like, why does, like, I think they sort of feel guilty, maybe that's not the right word, but there's this expectation that something comes out every week, and then we start getting this kind of, well, I'm gonna say it, crap. And I'd rather have nothing, I think. Like,
yeah.
It's getting to the point that events like this could be interesting if you do them every now and then, but now they have sort of milked out the idea, and I don't think they could do another event like this for at least another year before people will be interested in doing it again.
Or unless they were tied to some other kind of content out there that wasn't, you know, just let's do this for the heck of it. So
Yeah,
you know, I completely agree with you. They're not crap, because what you get from them in the mystery boxes can be good. And also, the cosmetics that you get as well look good, if that's your kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, but there's no reason why these kind of cosmetics could not just be added to Solomon's store, and
that's
it. I have the feeling that there's a group of graphics artists just making outfit after outfit, and then they're just like, all right, this one we put in Solomon's store, and oh, maybe we can make an event about this one. And like, it feels a bit that way. It feels that there's a huge push. Maybe there's an excess of graphics developers right now, and they just need to put this content somewhere, but it feels so lazy and repetitive. I'm not even sure anymore what to say of these
events.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't even like get what's the word I'm looking for? Excited about them now because we've had so many of them. But anyways, second part of this week's update is the RuneSpan rewards change, which came from Game Jam. So a number of changes here that things you can purchase. So there's a new wizard up there adjacent to the other one. You can purchase a portal redirect, which allows you to have the mid-level portal in the RuneSpan directed to the high-level floor. If you're a high-level runecrafter, you can just start on the high level. Makes sense. RuneSphere teleport tablet that teleports you directly to the RuneSphere when it's active, even across floors. You need to be in the RuneSpan to use that. A yellow wizard teleport tablet that teleports you to the yellow wizard. Unstable essence, stackable essence that can be used on an altar to gain XP, but no runes. Use 10 at a time at fast rates. All right. So this update, I think, has the potential to change runecrafting, at least, you know, the way people train runecrafting after they visit the RuneSpan for a long time. So basically what this essence is, it's like normal rune essence, except you don't get any runes from it, and you purchase it for 500 RuneSpan points, and you get 200 of them. So roughly 2.5 points per essence. Now, when I see this, I'm thinking, okay, what is this going to do to runecrafting? Like, obviously, it's not going to be as much XP as you know, going through the abyss and using your demon scald necklace and whatnot and doing blood runes, right? But what you can do with this is that, let's just say you went from level 1 to 99 in the RuneSpan, right? Do you have any idea how many points that would be? I mean, I don't have a number on hand right now, but I assume it'd be quite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So what I am thinking is that someone could, in theory, go from, you know, say level 1 to 99 or whatever level you unlock the RuneSpan at, and then after that, they could just purchase all this unstable essence and go to the blood altar and then just do, you know, quick AFK training for the rest of their XP to 120. Because, I mean, it's entirely feasible that that's something that could happen, because there's no limit on how much of this unstable essence you can use. And it gives the same XP as a traditional rune at that altar. So each unstable rune essence gives 10.5 XP when crafting at the blood rune altar. So basically what this means is that for each stack of 10 that you purchase, you're getting 105 XP. So if you multiply that by 50, you can basically see there that in a very small amount of time, you can get a huge amount of experience. And I went there and I tested this right now at the runes or at the blood altar. And basically, if I just I'm just gonna go through this here and tell you guys how long it takes. So you enter the blood altar and then you know, you just click on the altar with the unstable essence, and then lo and behold, you're runecrafting. So starting now, I am runecrafting with unstable essence, crafting 1,000 of them, and it's just going and going and going. It's down to 800 right now. So you can see how fast this is, and this is XP coming in at 105 per tick, runecrafting XP. So I don't know if it's going to be faster than traditional runecrafting, but it's definitely something to consider. I think if you have done RuneSpan to level 99 and are doing it to one and are wanting to get 120 runecrafting, though I don't know how that makes people feel for the skill. Currently 400 left. You basically need to reclick every 600 or so. So there we go. And slowly ticking down, we're at 300. So those of you guys listening, you can time how quick it is to get what is basically, well, let me just tell you how much XP that was in just a second once it finishes here, because it's just wrapping up right about now. So that was 1,000 unstable essence for 10.5 XP each. And that's how long it took to get 10,500 runecrafting XP.
Wow.
Yeah. And that was only like a minute and a half or so.
So, I mean, there's a few things here, right? First of all, Runespan on its own already changed runecrafting a lot. Like,
yeah.
That was...
Yeah, that's not really up for debate here, I think, because...
A very controversial thing, actually.
Yeah.
But, like, if you just look at, like, in a way, Unstable Assets is really, really powerful. And I would say it's probably too powerful.
Yep.
But on the other hand, you have to, like, spend points on getting it, and that means you actually have to train Runespan.
Mm-hmm.
And it also means you have to forego other rewards. Like, if you want to get Tier 1 Esteem, if you want to get the Master Runecrafter's Robes, if you want to get pouches, like, if you want to get the Wicked outfit, like, you forego unstable essence or those rewards. Like, you have to pick between the two.
Yeah, so it's going to be a choice of whether you want the XP or you want the rewards that come from Runespan, or if you want the GP rewards from traditional runecrafting.
Now, so it's not that this, like, you cannot do this forever for free.
That's
like,
right.
There's a time cost and something you have to give up to
right.
be able to do this.
And that's what I said. I imagine someone going to level 99 in Runespan and then after that cashing in all their points for unstable essence and seeing how far they can get.
I mean, I am 99 runecrafting, and I didn't do runecrafting all the way because, like, I was already pretty high level when it came out. But I'm not tier 1 esteem yet. I think I'm tier 2 right now. So, like, if you want to go for comp in the end, you need that tier 1 esteem, and nothing is going to help you. Like, nothing's going to help you there except for doing more Runespan. So, sure, like, you can do it if you really want to do that. Sprint towards 99 runecrafting or any runecrafting goal, but on the other hand, like, it's like, in the end, you still have to do the same amount of Runespan if you want to get the point rewards.
Yeah, that's right.
But I don't think that mitigates the fact that this is incredibly, incredibly quick, and I'm struggling agreeing with the rates that have been put in the game here. And while the response of, oh, this is overpowered, this is too fast, is a very common response to new training things being added to the game.
Yeah.
The fact that people are saying, I'm going to make the most use of this before this gets nerfed, that is a pretty strong signal that, like, this is not okay. And I have seen people saying that, like, I'm just going to make use of this because they're going to nerf this.
Right.
And, I mean, let's look at runecrafting. Did it really need a faster training method? Like, I know runecrafting is not the fastest skill, but I don't think it was in need of a method that is really, really fast.
Yeah. And, I mean, Runespan already did that. Are you talking about Runespan or Unstable Essence when that first came out?
I mean, I do not disagree with Runespan coming
out
initially, especially not after the rune value upgrades and the demonic skull. I think they're very interesting.
There's
different
good
training methods that
yes.
are both viable
and
in their own way. I just don't think that unstable was necessary on top of that because it like, there's so many different ways. You can train runecrafting really, really fast by doing Abyss with a demonic skull, and I think that is really, really good experience rates. It's just, this is sort of combining the worst of both worlds, like the laziness of Runespan and the really fast experience rates. And I think that's wrong, and it's going to, in the end, diminish the skill.
Yeah. You know, I was just doing some Googling around. Apparently, it's about 100,000 Runespan points from level 91 to 99 in the Runespan. So at 500 per, that would give you a stack of 200... of 200 unstable essence, each with 10 each. So 200 times 10, that would give you 2,000 unstable essence for 100,000 points. And now if you just basically took that to the blood altar, that'd be... No, that's not right. Oh, I messed up a number there. Sorry, what did I say? 100,000 points from 91 to 99 and 500 per, so that would give you 200. And each one... I'm messing up on my math here. Anyways, but the point is that you get around 100,000 points going from level 91 to 99 in RuneSpan, I think. And with that being said, it's not going to be a huge amount of XP that you get, but it definitely is going to have the chance to swing some people for gaining more XP after the fact. Now,
yeah, I mean, that's sort of the point, right? You are training, like, RuneSpan is maybe not the fastest way to train your runecrafting, but it might very well be one of the best ways, if not like the best, like depending on how active or AFK you want to play. And then what Jagex is doing is sort of awarding a already really viable training method with more XP. And that is sort of, I think that is what my problem is mostly. Like, if they had applied this unstable essence reward to a training method that is maybe not very viable or maybe unpopular, that would have been more interesting. Like, maybe the ZMI altar, for example, that is still a really good training method, but it's probably less popular these days.
Yeah.
And like you could... You could use a reward like this to really shift people, like make them use more alternative methods, and instead it's added to something that's already widely used. So like the incentive, it was not necessary, and it's still added, and that just doesn't add up, and that is sort of upsetting.
Yeah, and you know, for what it's worth, you can't use the unstable essence with the ZMI altar. So there's that. And you know, I think one thing that I and everyone should be incredibly grateful for with this is that unstable essence did not come from Treasure Hunter.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you look at unstable essence and you compare it to some of the XP that you get from the various events and whatnot that come around, you can get the Valentine's event, for example, and you can get the enhanced tools off Treasure Hunter. This kind of XP and AFK fastness is kind of in league with that. So at the same time, well, you know, this might seem a little bit overpowered here, I think we all should be grateful that this didn't come from Treasure Hunter.
Protean essence.
Oh, God, don't give them that suggestion. Oh, you know, that's exactly what this is, because protean essence wouldn't give you anything back. It would be a bit slower, but it would maybe give more XP. So there you go. I don't know.
So let's go back at like the other rewards, like the portal redirect to like the high level floor. Was that necessary? That's already in the game, right? You can use the max guild garden portal for that.
Yeah,
and I feel that is now a bit devalued because of that. And for the same reason, like Runesphere teleport tablet, Yellow Wizard teleport tablet, like. The whole point of that content being added was so that you have to move away from your spot and go and find them.
Yep.
And that was part of the content. And all of that is just scrapped and be like, here you have like a tablet and just like get the rewards. And while maybe the Runesphere was not as popular, Yellow Wizards were actually already being sold out. So again, why was this whole update necessary? Like Master Runecrafter's Robe, I like that is being added to the reward shop. Altar Tablet, Teleport Tablet, I'm also fine with that.
Right.
Both of them came from the Great Orb Project,
which is
not
dead.
Very popular. it's dead. I mean, and they're both runecrafting rewards, and I'm fine with those being added. But the other ones are new things that were not necessary, and I am not entirely sure what sort of inspired these changes. Like, I never had the feeling that RuneSpan was broken in any way. It felt like a really solid piece of content.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I think there are areas in the game that need this kind of stuff a lot more.
And, you know, it came from Game Jam, and that's a question up for debate is, you know, these updates. Obviously, Jagex liked them, otherwise they wouldn't have put them in, and it wouldn't got, you know, off the forum post for Game Jam. And, like, when you look at these updates, they are really simple, because the animation that happens when you use the unstable essence is the same animation that happens when you're siphoning something at the runespan. So you can tell that was, you know, okay, let's just use the resources we have in game, and there we go. So I think this update is just like all the other Game Jam updates, something the players wanted, and, you know, if properly thought out with the original design of the runespan, and if you went back in time to when the runespan first came out, you really wouldn't have seen all these here, aside from the altar teleport tablets and the master runecrafter robes.
Yeah.
So,
I'm just sort of upset that content in RuneScape is being diminished. That is not like I'm saying diminished because I think these changes make it less interesting and less good. And
yeah,
and then there is things in the game that just need so much work and they're just not being updated.
You know, you're entirely right. And I talked to someone who got 99 runecrafting the traditional way before ZMI Altar even came out. Or maybe it was with ZMI, I don't remember entirely, but it was before RuneSpan. This was Dave, who was on the show last year, and, you know, he basically was dumbfounded by the entire thing that they would bring something like the Unstable Essence out, and his first reaction was, "Is this come from Treasure Hunter?" And the reaction coming from RuneSpan was, "Dear God." So, you know, for traditional runecrafters, this is kind of a slap in the face, but it is what it is.
I mean, runecrafting is one of these skills that people complain about. It's a slow skill. It's maybe not the most interesting one. And people complain about it. And I think Jagex sort of misread the cue. I was like, okay, apparently we need to fix this. Well, this is just people being lazy and not wanting to spend the time on RuneSpan or not spending the...
Or not wanting to move.
Yeah, like not spending the activity and like having to actively do the Abyss. And it's, I don't know. I give up. I think Jagex completely missed it here. And I'm not entirely sure why this was picked up by Gmod. Like whoever implemented must hate runecrafting because that skill has really taken a severe hit.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. So, shall we move on to the Ark?
Oh, dear.
Okie dokie. So, the Ark also had a number of Game Jam changes from Double XP Weekend. The High Armor of Honto, the Winds of Waiko, Thalassia's Revenge, and the Rage of Huiji can now be obtained with Chimes and Taji, too. I'm still not sure how to pronounce that rare currency, but basically some armor items you can now get from the Waiko reward shop. What do you think of them adding these items as rewards that you can pay with for Chimes and Tejutu too?
Now it's going to take even longer to complete the arc.
Yeah.
Because I think these rewards were added as comp requirements as well, weren't they?
I think so. Not 100% sure, but the Honto armor pieces are 7,500 chimes each and 10 Tejutu. Well, the headpiece is 10k chimes and 15. The Honto leg guards are 15k chimes, and the Honto's cuirass is 20k chimes and 30 Tejutu. Meanwhile, Thalassia's revenge is 25k chimes and 50 Tejutu. The Rage of Huiji is 25k chimes and 50, and same with the Winds of Waiko. So this is going to be a lot of chimes and Tejutu that you're hunting for here. And these are, of course, level 70 hybrid armors. So, I mean, it doesn't really make sense as a comp requirement, does it? Because, I mean, at that level, what are you going to use a tier 70 armor for, right?
I mean, by then you have Warpriest, a set of Warpriests.
Exactly. So that's a little bit.
I don't know. I get why it's a comp requirement, because comp means completing every piece of content, but.
A little bit annoying. Also, Aaliyah Crablets that you start mining will be named Relaxed. Aaliyah Crablets in a timer bar will be appeared.
Oh, I guess that's good.
Yeah, I mean, apparently the idea is that when you're mining them, you relieve stress off them. So by doing that, you take the stress off them and they get relaxed. So it's like you're giving them a massage with a pickaxe on their back. So, turtle traps have now fewer restrictions on where they can be replaced or placed. The Ark Journal now keeps track of rare resources on your claimed island. There's now a quick chat option for the prestige count in the Eminishi Slayer creatures. And the Uncharted Island system has been updated to ensure that all things that should spawn do so and no longer spawn on top of each other.
Okay, let me do like a call out to all listeners. If there's anybody who's actually enjoying playing the Ark and getting the rewards, please reach out, because like I'm trying to look for new things to do in the game, sort of, and I tried the Ark again and I spent 2 hours emptying the resource on an island and I got back and I didn't feel like I achieved anything in those 2 hours. There's so little interesting content in the Ark. Like, there's the mini quests, I guess I should do, but they're very combat heavy. I still fail to see what the Ark really adds to the game. I find it to be a grind. I find it to be tedious. And
of course, it is a grind.
Like, look at these updates. Like, nothing of this really addresses any of the fundamental issues of the upgrade. And I know there are probably people playing it. People try to get all the rewards. But I'm honestly not sure if there's anybody who's actually enjoying the content for the content.
And I think this comes because you look at it from a game designer's point of view, and there's nothing here that is engaging in terms of gameplay. It's all just a grind to tick off the checkboxes in your Ark Journal and hit the comp requirement for most people.
Yeah. And, like, I mean, some skills are a bit like that. Like, they're a bit of a grind, but at least your character's progressing, and over time you unlock new things. While with the Ark, I mean, yes, you unlock rewards, but they don't alter the actual playing experience. Like, whether you just unlock your first reward or going for the very last one, you're still hitting your pickaxe in the back of Aaliyah Crablets, or, like, you're still doing divination or whatever. Like, it's still the same thing. There's no progression through the entire thing. It's just one big grind that takes huge amounts of time. Like, you can't even go there and play it for 15 minutes because emptying an island takes hours.
Yep.
It's just, I get why content like island needs to take a while to play through because of the supply cost, but like the whole thing just, it is upsettingly bad. And like, then they come out with these updates and I feel that they should forego any of these tiny updates, and if they want to continue to invest in it, they need to seriously consider changing it and just fixing it. Like,
yeah.
It's still broken. It's,
I mean, Parnassius even had a suggestion on ways of making the Ark more engaging for Game Jam, and you know, there were already other Ark updates coming, and you know, they said no, we don't want to do that right now because there's other Ark updates. And I don't know if this is the extent of the Ark updates that are on the way, or if there's going to be more. But if this is all that's here to try and update a bit of the Ark, then you know, that's not really serving anyone. So I don't know. It just feels like it has so much potential, but it's not capitalized on.
I mean, people told me that like the experience rates are not bad of doing the Ark, and maybe that's the case. Maybe you get pretty good divination experience or mining experience, but it's also not a valid training method, really, if you want to go for one skill, because like, you never know what you get. So there's also like, it doesn't really fit any of the like track huts in the game. Like, it doesn't fit training method. It doesn't really fit lore. Well, the mini quests do, but like, it doesn't really fit that area. It doesn't really fit like with the engaging, interesting content. So like, it just doesn't have a place.
Yep, I completely agree with you on that. All right, and of course that was from Game Jam. So I mean, I think some of the Game Jam updates definitely hit the spot. This one doesn't seem to have, and there are questions about the Runespan one, but we'll have to see how that goes and if anyone's doing any insane levels of XP with that.
I mean, I don't want to diminish, like, I don't want to completely nullify that these are improvements. Like, they are good improvements. Like, I mean, maybe I should say it, but like, most of these updates, I mean, the armor is a bit unnecessary, but the other one, they're quality of life.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Updates. So I'm not saying that this is like
garbage,
not worth the effort. Like, it is definitely, it's definitely a positive improvement of the game, but I feel it doesn't really do anything to fix the arc, which is, in my opinion, just one huge, big broken update. And up to the point that it is actually fixed is basically just a waste of time.
Yep.
And I mean, right, both the player's time and the developer's time.
Yeah. Apparently, someone on Reddit had, going from 47 to level 99 RC, had 216,000 rune span points. So at 500 per, so if you take 216,000 at 500 per, that allows you to buy 200 essence 432 times. Times 200 essence, that's 86,400 unstable essence. Now at 10.5 XP, that's about 907,000 XP that you can get from unstable essence going from level 47 to 99.
So that's only like 1 mil.
Yeah, 1 mil. So it's not too bad. 900k XP.
Mm-hmm. It's just really, really fast to use it.
Yeah. Anyways, thank you to the Twitter for jumping in on that, at RandyWalker21. See? That's the benefits of tweeting when we're doing a show. If you can apparently source information like that, so nicely done. Alrighty, anything else on these changes before we move on to patch notes for the week?
I think I've ranted enough.
Alright, so for patch notes this week, previewing full outfits in the wardrobe that do not have boots or gloves now show bare feet and bare hands. Alright then?
I think it's good. Like, I think the reason behind this is that if you try to like look at a full outfit and it doesn't replace your feet or hands with anything, you might mistake the feet and hands you're wearing as part of the outfit. And this sort of better reflects what you're previewing.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah, that needed to be done. Players will no longer lose Slayer points if they click out of the task selection interface after purchasing an additional Soul Reaper task. Kind of a interesting little edge case right there. It's something that won't happen all the time and will get itself fixed, so that's good.
Mm-hmm.
Lucky items are now listed as reclaimable on the Treasure Hunter prize management interface. They were already made reclaimable a couple weeks back from Diango if you get them, so that's good. The Iron Man purchase restrictions have been lifted on buying the Master Runecrafting outfit. Iron Man can now purchase this four-piece outfit either from the Thaler shop or the new Runespan shop. Alrighty. The Dragonkin Forge is now consistently lit when teleporting to Curadel via the Slayer skill cape if the forge has been previously lit. That's another little interesting bug, that it wouldn't be lit if you teleported into that cave.
I mean, the reason for that is that there's actually two caves in existence in the game. One with the forge lit and one with the forge unlit, which is also why if you are in the cave with the forge lit, then you can't see people who don't have the forge lit. So like, there's actually two different caves and you can't see the players in the other cave. And what my guess is that they just had the coordinates of the teleport set to the unlit cave.
Right. And this was a result of, I believe, Wellgothic Sleep is when you could light that cave, right?
Correct. Yeah. Yes. And the skill cape teleport, of course, comes from the skill cape perk.
That's right. Well, then, that's pretty lit.
Gosh.
It's no longer possible to receive a skull in the wilderness by attempting to attack your own familiar.
Yeah, kudos to the person who found that out. I mean,
it's an attack, so obviously the system wouldn't know any different if it wasn't looking at who it was going for, right?
Well, I assume so.
Well, there's your lit patch notes this week. You have anything else that you'd like to throw in there, fam?
I'm not going to respond to that. I'm not going to.
All right. Ready for the Hydra lamps then?
Oh. Not really, but we have to get through it, don't we?
Yeah. So Hydra lamps are kind of like smoldering lamps, giving you regular XP and a skill and immediately awarding the same amount of your stored bonus XP, but there's one different. They will award XP and bonus XP in two skills rather than one. Each skill receives 60% of the total XP it had earned from a smoldering lamp for 120% total. You know,
Do you want to give a 30-second recap of like what you discussed when the smoldering lamps came out?
Yeah, so basically, smoldering lamps are the lamps that give you XP and bonus XP in a certain skill, and only one skill. So, you know, let's say you chose Herblore, for example, you get, say, 30,000 Herblore XP and 30,000 Herblore bonus XP. That would add to your account. Now, instead of that, you get to choose two skills. So, say, Herblore and Dungeoneering, and you would go 60% of 30, whatever that is, not doing quick math right now because I screwed that up earlier, and then 60% of whatever the XP is that you'd get for Dungeoneering as well, and then you'd mix those two up, and that's what you now get with a Hydra lamp. I'm just going to say I'm glad these aren't Hydra smoldering lanterns, because the smoldering lanterns that use XP from your bonus XP pool as well, that's pretty overpowered, and I don't think we would want to be going mm-hmm. there for giving to two skills more than one. So
this is really on the edge, I feel.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's 120% of normal, so you can see if that's pushing it a little too far, but it is kind of expanding out beyond just the one skill focus that we've had for lamps and stars all along.
I mean, it's 120% of smoldering lamps, which is already giving bonus XP on top of normal XP, which is what you would get normally, and, well, it's...
Yeah, it's a lot of XP, and I think that, you know, if you're really wanting to think about where this XP is coming from, you know, you would kind of be able to see what Treasure Hunter does in this kind of update that we have this week from the 23rd to the 27th. So they're just out there, and we're just notifying you guys of this, of what they are, if you haven't been on game recently and you want to hear... of course, we don't suggest people should use Treasure Hunter, and we don't say people shouldn't use Treasure Hunter. That's a decision, I think, that's entirely left up to the player. That's the way I like to look at these things. So, alrighty. You ready to move on to my next little segment here? Something that I have fun to share with you guys that, you know, really would never take a pass in RuneScape as it is. So... you want to hear a story, Sirion?
I'm completely up for happy stories.
Okay. I think this is going to be definitely happy from a game designer's perspective here, because... Ooh, that's weird. That's weird. I've never seen Chrome do that before. Anyways, I play the game called Star Trek Online, and, you know, it's an MMO. So what's the number one thing that happens in MMOs over time and things that need to be looked at?
I have the feeling that things in MMOs become easier and easier over time to achieve.
That's right. And as a result, there needs to be balance in order to keep people of all levels and skill levels happy with the content that's available. Because, you know, if you... have a game and everyone is able to do the end game content, where's the fun in that, right? So that is currently what Star Trek Online is player testing on their test server, is a massive rebalance to the space combat section of the game. Now, the game is split up into two categories, space combat and ground combat. They both have different mechanics and they both have different abilities. So space combat is its own thing. And basically what's happened over the last, I'd say, 2 years in Star Trek Online is that everything has been on a constant upclimb in terms of the amount of DPS that players are able to put out, damage per second, based on power creep, new abilities, and changes to the game that, you know, sometimes aren't necessarily thought out when they're brought in. And it basically makes certain characters and certain classes of characters overpowered. So last week they published a blog post in which they said their game balance pass is, has the following goals. To increase the fun, games are about fun and players should not be made to feel that their fun is wrong. Player investment retains value. While things need to be adjusted, a setup that was optimized before should still be useful and effective afterwards. Choices should be meaningful. Anywhere the game gives you a choice, there should be no choice that always takes, nor one that you never take. So I'm going to break these 3 points down and tell you guys about what this game is doing, and then I'm going to compare them to some things in RuneScape. So, first off, increasing the fun. Now, in Star Trek Online, everything has become about the amount of damage per second that you can do, to the point where a person who starts out the game and doesn't have a helping hand is going to have a hard time being effective in any of the endgame queues. But on the other hand, you can have someone who completely knows the mechanics, completely knows where to park, and completely knows when to hit certain abilities, who can do 250,000 damage per second, compared to someone else who just started the game, who is only doing 20,000 damage per second, or less. So that's a huge discrepancy right there, right?
That's like 10 times that.
Exactly. And sometimes they're less than 20,000 DPS, the people who are just starting out. So what they have done for this is, rather than, you know, just increasing the amount of damage that everyone does specifically to raise the floor and make it easier to get into, what they instead have done is focused on some of the mechanics at the higher end that were doing too much damage for these players. For example, there's an ability called Feedback Pulse, which reflects damage back towards the enemy that you're attacking, and this was doing, you know, upwards of 60% of the damage in some endgame queues that people were running, which really doesn't make sense, because this is a science ability, and it was being used by tactical captains in non-science ships. So basically, this would be the equivalent in RuneScape of having someone using a supercharged magic spell who was wearing melee armor to take down Necks, for example, just to give an example, if RuneScape was that broken. So basically what they're doing is they're going through a huge balance pass and looking at abilities like this and toning them down drastically. So, for example, this Feedback Pulse that used to do upwards of, you know, 60% of the damage in one queue is down to around 5%. So it has been brought down to what is a sane level by performing various fixes. Same thing goes for any number of high-end tools and equipment that people can use in game that do lots of damage. And all of these have been brought down to reasonable levels, upwards of, you know, 30 to 50% nerfs in some cases for people at the high end. And this is where the story with relation to RuneScape comes in. Could you imagine if we were in a situation where Evolution of Combat was broken and the top end, the people who knew what abilities to use and whatnot, were nerfed by 30 to 50%? To kind of rebalance EOC, could you imagine what the reaction of that would be in RuneScape?
I mean, doing a big rebalance like this takes, I'm not, I'm going to go with the meme, courage, right?
There you go.
This is, I think this is a really hard decision to make as a developer.
Oh yeah, most definitely.
You're going to break the game for people. Like, that sounds harsh, but that's what you're going to do. And while I think it's a good thing to do, I think it's also a really hard thing, and it can definitely sort of backfire. And like, if we look back at RuneScape before EOC came out, combat was broken. I mean, it was.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You could melee escape to it. So, like, EOC was RuneScape's version of this, and it backfired. Like, it came out. It was not properly playtested, which seems to be happening with, like, this Star Trek Online update, right? It's, like, this beta service, and I assume people's feedback
is
being...
Oh, yeah, everyone is testing it. Everyone's trying out new things. You know, people are posting, for the most part, constructive feedback. And we've seen, actually, some changes in response to this feedback that has brought things up from where they were initially put by Cryptic, the developers of the game. So player testing plays a huge role in pulling something like this off successfully.
Yeah, and I think so. So the point is, like, you have, like, you make this huge change. You make a lot of people sort of relearn huge aspects of the game, and that's what happened with EOC. And I think the lesson here is, or like the most important part of this is, you cannot do things like this without the support of your player base.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
If your player is against the updates you're making, you're going to run into trouble and this is going to backfire on you. And I think that is sort of what happened with EOC. People did not really get a chance to experience beforehand.
And they didn't get a chance to understand what was happening.
Like it was not really transparent to how things work, what they were changing. There was very little opportunity for player feedback, and I never really noticed player feedback being incorporated in big changes in the system. So,
and that's just because it was too toxic.
Yeah, but also, like, there was this thing that, like, people wanted things to change. Like, there's some fundamental problems with the combat system still, like the tick rate, and they were like, we can't do this, and it was just dismissed like that. And, like, the whole relation between Jagex and the player base during that beta phase of EOC was just very, very hostile instead of working together. And I think both parts might be to blame. Maybe there's a very difficult community.
I think it was both.
But I think that if you take this on seriously, like, even in RuneScape, it could have worked. It just takes a different approach. You have to be like, okay, this is broken. This is the reasons why. This is why I want to change it. And then work from there and not just drop a whole new thing like, oh, right, we are changing the combat system entirely. We're almost done. We're going to do this beta and release it in a state that's not even ready. That's what happened with RuneScape.
Yeah.
And that's why we currently have legacy mode. That's why we have all these combat updates still. And that's why we have a divided player base.
Yeah.
And instead, if you take the approach of, okay, let's take this serious. Let's make sure that we can agree with the players on that it's broken, and let's work together to come up with a system. Not only will you end up with a better system, you will also have a player base that supports it, has experienced it, and then when it goes into the game, first of all, you have people that sort of already know what's going on, meaning you have, like, a baseline, a foundation of players that can keep the game moving forward. You have the support, so you have less struggle getting people to adapt to the new system. So,
yeah,
and this is a really courageous decision, and I think it takes even more courage doing it the right way. I think Jagex was sort of like, we need to make a decision, but then went at it really lazy and sort of tried to avoid interacting with the player base, sort of avoiding the backlash, and that backfired quite hard.
Yeah. And I mean, there have been AMAs on the Reddit and on the forums for this game, as well as, you know, very transparent nature as to what the actual numbers are behind the scenes of things that are going on, which is good. And I mean, you definitely had to do this because there's one thing here in the initial blog post that says Fire at Will now has a slight penalty to weapon damage instead of an increase at ranks 2 and 3 and has an accuracy debuff as well. Fire at Will was an ability that 90% of the damage base used in-game. It's basically an AoE target for beam-based weapons, which means that you can hit up to 2 targets at once. And previously, you got a damage boost if you were using Fire at Will rank 2 or 3. And it was 100% accurate. So now they have rebalanced that by saying that there's a slight damage decrease for hitting those extra two targets, as well as having a damage debuff. So with that being said, they effectively dropped a huge nerf or rebalance on an ability that 90% of the player base uses. And of everything that has been complained about, this has probably been complained about the least. So, I mean, just the fact people are able to get out there and test these updates really shows what testing and a collaborative back and forth can do while the developers are still maintaining the lion's share of the decision-making on this process. Note that each of these updates and balance passes, it's not going to be determined by a poll if these go live. They are going to go live. It's just a matter of when. But the developers are staying in control of this, and they are listening. And that's the approach Jagex needs to take more often, is that they need to present their ideas of what they want to do. They need to explain it clearly, and they need to do it in such ways that they can cut through all the toxicity and FUD that appears on various RS communities so that their end goal is clear. And, like you said, they just need to have the courage to do it.
They can do that by not using Reddit.
There you go. There you go. So, you know, as much as this is a look back at, you know, how EOC could have been done, I think this is ultimately a good example of what collaboration looks like from game developers. You know, a number of years ago, I wouldn't have expected this from Star Trek Online, this level of collaboration, and quite frankly, it surprised me to see this level of collaboration, so I'm grateful for that. And, you know, I think that's the way it needs to be done. Anytime Jagex wants to do something in the forward as well, there needs to be a test server, it needs to be explained, and they just need to have the courage to go through with their changes, providing they listen to the player base along the way.
I mean, yeah, don't get me wrong, it's really hard to go out there in front of your player base and say, okay, we want to do this, what do you think? Like, that's putting yourself in some sort of a vulnerable position. Like, you have to spend time, like, getting your update to the players and explaining it, and like that's really the hard way of doing it. And it's a lot easier to just come up with some changes and like do some halfway like player testing thing and then go live. Like that's the easy way to go at it, and just you really have to invest if you want to work together with your players, and really have to be willing to explain why you make changes.
Exactly.
And that is hard, but it's also a bit of an activation energy. So when I worked on our game, we had only a couple of beta testers, but they were really active, and you have to sort of sift through like the feedback, but in the end, it's a more satisfying experience for everybody, but like it requires more effort to get started on it. And all I can say is that I hope that this maybe sets a template for, say, the mining and smithing rework. I hope we can see that happening in a better way.
Yep.
Than EOC. And it is like this is only there as an example to show that this is possible. And like I don't think that blaming just the RuneScape community as being immature and hostile is that's just not fair.
Yeah, that's not the right answer.
Like, listen to this podcast on its own. Like, there is room for constructive feedback, and I just think it's the attitude you take as a developer that steers this, and that's definitely something that Jagex can learn on this.
Yeah. And I mean, they've come a long way too for Star Trek Online, because there was a time at which the player base, some of them knew more about the game mechanics than the developers did, because there was a huge turnover in developers. So some of the developers didn't even know how their core mechanics in the game worked.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, this is something just to keep in mind going forward, and I will keep you guys apprised on when these changes arrive. They've been on the test server for about 1 week. I'd imagine we'd probably see them on the test server for another 2 weeks probably before they arrive. So, because the amount of discussion about them has died down since last week, so that shows I think that people mm-hmm. are becoming accustomed to them. So we'll have to wait and see.
So one final note on this is that like this is really an open, transparent thing. Like, this is how the system works now. This is how it's gonna work, and these are the numbers. Jairus has this tendency of being like, we don't want to give away the numbers because that would like spoil it. And I think what that also does is sort of like not showing trust in your system. It sort of implies that if you would know the numbers, the fun would go out of it, which means that the system is not very well designed in the first place.
Like, yeah.
The best thing, like the best kind of update, is something you can completely understand, completely like to all the detail and still enjoy. And let's just hope we get away from that attitude of like bad assumptions and let's start like assuming the positive things.
Yeah. They don't have the exact numbers in the patch notes here for this, but if you go in game, pretty much all the numbers except for a few of them are available on tooltips. So that's something that they do very well as well. And, you know, Jagex could also learn from that. Let's have more information on the tooltips about damage and numbers and whatnot.
Yeah.
Let players min-max the game and figure things out.
I'm really interested to see how much information we're going to get next week on the luck rework. Like, I really hope that we get a transparent news post. Like, it doesn't all have to be the news post, but I hope we get a good amount of detail at least somewhere. And let's see where we are.
Well, I mean, it's Mod Timbo, so it should be fine, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Alrighty, well, we're going to move on to our questions and discussion topics for the week. First one is from Pernasius.
G'day, guys. Pernasius here. And my question this week was actually supposed to be posted last week, but it was partially covered by a question that Colton did send you, but I'd like a little bit more information if I could. That is, do you think making lore drops come from monsters so much lately is lazy on the developer's part, as the majority of players interested in lore are also those most interested in quests? While I understand it makes sense for some lore books to be dropped from NPCs, wouldn't it be better overall for both the game and the player if the books were dropped as rewards from mini-quests? I would have loved to have seen a small quest to unlock next AOD and then have the books as a reward for completing it and perhaps doing some sort of small task for Ashuelet Reyes, the NPC who acts as a bank just outside the Ice Pigeon prison which holds next. The Master Quest Cape was thought of as an informal comp cape for questers and skillers, yet lately most of the new recs for it are combat-oriented. Also, do you think the Master Quest Cape should at the very least be a trimmed comp requirement? It is a very big part of the game now, and most of its requirements are about completing content. Therefore, shouldn't such a prestigious cape as the trimmed comp be truly completionist and have the Master Quest Cape as part of it? As always, thank you for the great podcast. Happy RuneScaping all, and I'll see you all in-game.
Absolutely, to that last part of that question. I absolutely think the Master Quest Cape should be a part of the Trimmed Completionist Cape, because isn't the Trimmed Completionist Cape supposed to be the cape that you get once you've done everything in-game?
I mean, I totally agree. It doesn't make sense that there's things you don't have to do for Trimmed Completionists. And in my opinion, both the Comp Cape and the Master Quest Cape should be subsets of the thing you do as a Trimmed Completionist.
Yeah. As for lore drops, I like the idea of a quest to unlock the boss creature. We had that with the Queen Black Dragon, and then you do a mini quest after that for the lore books. I think that would be a great way of doing it. It would also lower the barrier to entry of starting off some of those Master Quest Cape requirements and keep them truly lore and story focused rather than needing to revolve to combat. You think we could do that at this point, or is that ship sailed?
So I think the problem, if you want to say it as such, with like doing this solution is twofold. First of all, a mini quest takes time to develop. Like even a simple mini quest, it has to be developed, the dialogue has to be written, it has to be localized, the NPCs has to be added, the logic has to be added. So that's complicated. That's relatively complicated. Like it can still be done relatively simple, but we are looking at additional development time, and I think we all know how busy Jagex is like with their schedule.
Yeah, all the devs are now really, practically really working on expansions.
So that's the first problem. The second problem, and I don't want to like stereotype too much, but I think it is very fair to say that the communities of people who enjoy lore and questing, and the people that really enjoy PVM are pretty disjoint. I mean, I know people who enjoy both, but I think that in general that they are two pretty different audiences.
Yes.
And just as it would be bad to gate lore behind combat, it would also be bad to gate combat behind lore. So
even if it's a, you know, 25-minute simple quest?
I mean, in a way, like, for us, it's easy to say, sure, we'll do a quest before combat because we don't mind doing quests. But there are people who, if a new boss comes into the game, really just want to go there and take on that boss. They don't care about anything else. And I think it would be unfair for us to say, let's skate it behind the content, because we have always had it the other way around. Let's do it our way now. I think that, I mean, two wrongs don't make a right. Like, let's not, like, make it wrong both ways. I think what would be interesting is finding some sort of a balance. And I really like the idea of, for example, unlocking the bank with a mini quest. I think that would be a nice compromise where, like, you can do the combat without doing the quest. You can do the quest without doing the combat. But if you do both, you get the whole package. And that might be a better balance between the two. But as it is right now, like, I don't think it's good to sort of force people to content they don't like to get the content they do like. And we have to be honest that there are people who don't like this mini quest type of
That's
content.
Fair.
And, like, I think it's wrong to force them to do mini quests to access some content. I don't know. It happens.
You know, that's a very balanced perspective, because, you know, I think, oh, we've had that with the Queen Black Dragon. We had a quest that took about 40 minutes to unlock the Queen Black Dragon, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
no, you can kill the Queen Black Dragon, but you get a damage boost when you finish.
Ah, okay. So maybe what if they did something similar to that as well?
I'm fine with that. Like,
yeah,
it's still, like, it's on the edge, but, like on the other hand, like, I'm also sort of fine with it. Like, it is sort of, it becomes less, it doesn't force you to do it. And maybe a similar mechanic could be found with lore books. Maybe going and killing that boss gives you a decent chance to do the lore book. But, like, if you are happy to take some sort of a, like, hit, and maybe there's another more time-consuming way to get the book, but it involves easier or no combat at all. Like, I'm happy to make those balances. But even there, you have to be extremely careful. And this is a hard topic. But I am completely certain there are good solutions for this. And this comes back to, like, the point that Panacius is making, is that the way they are doing it, sort of, it's in the game, it sort of works, and they go the lazy way and just do it.
Yeah. And, you know, I think if there was more of the discussion like we talked about in the Star Trek Online section, between players and whatnot, these kind of ideas would come out quicker, right?
Yeah.
If they didn't get buried by the nonsensical stuff that gets thrown around in the forums.
I think we should consider where the lore drops from high-level PVM is necessary in the first place. Like, I...
True.
One hand, I sort of get it. Like, you want to give people this incentive to really go and experience this boss themselves to get to some sort of reward, instead of being able to avoid entire pieces of content and still, like, sort of become a completionist.
Like, what if back when first God Wars came out, they put a quest with it as well? Not, like, put the first God Wars out, then say a month later, put a quest out with it. And that quest could have been all the lore that was there for the first God Wars.
Yeah.
And then with Nex, and then the next Angel of Death, those could have been two sub-quests or follow-up quests on that God Wars story arc.
Yeah. I think we should, like, not try to, like, marry these things too much. Like, yeah, there is a place for putting lore behind combat, but that has been done now, and I think we should look for other ways of putting lore in the game, maybe, and like try to move away from this PVMing stuff, because there's enough reason to get questers to PVM now. Let's
So would you put the lore behind quests?
Let's come up with a good solution.
Would you put the lore behind quests, or would you do something else?
Both.
Okay, sure. And I guess that's a discussion topic for the next week. If anyone out there listening has one about what you'd like to hear for where you should get your lore from going forward, I think that'd be a great thing to do, because then what we could effectively do is we could just package this up as a series and say, hey, Jagex, here's an idea of what you can do to improve lore and combat. So,
I mean, we had a short discussion about this last week, I think, as well, like that it should be behind exploration. And
right.
while it is expensive content, it would also be the most fun.
Alrighty, thank you, Parnassius. Great question there, and definitely something I think we all want to see going forward. If you guys disagree or you want to say otherwise, you can send your own audio discussion question in. We'll have details about that in just a couple minutes. But first up is the next question from Thieves. Hey, fun game for you guys to try out. Log into RuneScape 3, head to any Grand Exchange, and proclaim your love for old-school RuneScape. For my test, I met with mostly silence. The few voices that perked up ranged from cool bro to, well, go play OSRS then. People really don't seem to care. Next, log into old-school RuneScape, head to the Grand Exchange, and this time proclaim your love for RuneScape 3. The result? Oh, man. It's like showing a red rag to an angry bull. Name-calling, belittling, and just torrents and torrents of pure hatred. My questions are, can you think of any examples of this with any other communities or franchises? 2, why do you think a large portion of the OSRS community hates RS3 so much? Is it like seeing your ex-girlfriend has become considerably more hotter and therefore you hate her even more? And 3, if you could copy and paste your character over to old school RS, would you do it? Thanks, guys. All right, so any other examples?
So can I just
like
comment
this
on the irony of going to the Grand Exchange in OSRS? The Grand Exchange, which did not exist in 2007.
Very true.
Just saying.
All right. Any other examples of where something like this would happen, where it's so toxic, going back and forth?
As far as I know, there has never been a game or a community that has decided to split up in such a drastic way. And I still believe that Jarius made a huge, huge mistake doing this. I think this was a bad mistake. I think it did not show trust in your own product. And
it didn't show leadership.
Like, there's so many things wrong with this, and I almost want to say there's a reason that these things don't happen anywhere else, because they're just a terrible idea. And I think that is honestly a reason why this doesn't happen more often. But this toxicity, that's a difficult word. Toxicity is not something that's uncommon to the internet. So it has died down maybe a bit over the last year, but like there was this time where there were huge debates between web browsers or operating system or phone vans. And these sound very different, but the tone is really it is like that, and it's still a bit like that. It's just maybe a bit less extreme. So there you go. That's
actually a good example. I know people used to always try and spear me for using a Mac, right?
Yeah, and, I mean, you know, it still happens. Like when you, even in our own clan, like I don't like admitting this, but in our own clan, even sometimes, mostly jokingly, but sometimes seriously, it's like, all right, my RuneScape is not behaving great today. If you say that, they're like, you're playing on a Mac, right? And I'm like, yes. And they're like, well, to fix it, play on Windows. That is not...
That doesn't solve the problem, and it's incredibly short-sighted.
Response. Yeah. And like for Rocket League, for example, a couple of months ago, Steam controllers stopped working on the Mac version of Rocket League, and the issue is mostly ignored by the developers, which is upsetting enough. But then you go into like the topics about this issue, and the only answers are like, well, then just play on Windows.
Yep.
And like it's slightly different, as subtle differences, but it's the same attitude. It's like there's this group of people that sort of feel that they made the right choice, and if you don't do it, you're wrong. And so
it's like saying you have an Apple Watch to people who don't see the point of it or think it's horrendously overpriced.
I mean, I do think it's horrendously overpriced.
Well, compared to the competition, there was an article about that the other week.
Yeah, I mean, but I don't want to go into this in too much detail, and I just think it's overpriced for the product, not necessarily. I think the entire group, like not necessarily Apple.
There you go. And see, that's a sane argument to make, but the people who are doing these kind of arguments about communities and whatnot don't do that.
Yeah.
So
there you go. I think in general, all these like brand discussions, that's
Xbox versus PS4.
Them.
Xbox One versus PS4 is another one.
There you go. Like these things, they are sort of very comparable, I think. And like even there, I think there's sort of like I don't want to. Maybe I'm wrong, but the way I perceive it, for example, is that let's look at like iOS versus Android, for example. I have the feeling that Apple people would be more aggressive commenting on Android products than Android users would comment on iOS products. Maybe that's just a perception, but I think there is often this imbalance in products. I think there's often one group that is sort of doing
I'd agree this. With that.
Hmm?
I'd agree with that statement.
So, I mean, I'm not trying to say that all iOS users are bastards. So it's something. It's just... it's a general trend I perceive, and I think the same holds for OSRS versus RuneScape 3. I mean, I know nice OSRS players, and I know that some RuneScape 3 players are not the nicest people, but I would agree with the trend, and it's so sad.
Yep. Why does the OSRS community hate RS3 so much? You know, normally you'd think it'd be the other way around for that, but it seems as though, based on this example, the vast majority of the, you know, toxic people are more vocal on old school RS. Granted, yes, they still exist on RS3, but it seems to go one way, and that's kind of like what you were saying. Do you think it's because they see their game as perhaps the true version of RuneScape, of what RuneScape should have stayed as, and they see the current version of RS3 as some imposter with, you know, pay-to-win, real-world trading through Treasure Hunter and Solomon Store kind of thing?
I think that might be part of it. I think another part of it may be the community, like the way that works. Like, I don't engage with OSRS community at all, but I know it's very, very different from the RS3 community, and I think there is that sort of leads to, maybe it's not the right word, but sort of elitist approach, like feeling that you're right because I would say that maybe the OSRS community would be stronger than the RS3 community. I think the RS3 community is more fragmented, and that is maybe what makes people feel more strongly about OSRS than RS3. And finally, and this is going to be a bit of a dangerous statement, and I don't want to sort of overgeneralize, but I think that the kind of people that would respond nicely would be more likely to stick with RS3. And I think the people who are more likely to be not nice would be also be more vocal and more likely to move back to OSRS. I think it sort of has to do with character.
I think people. That's a fair assessment.
And as again, I really, really, really want to emphasize that this is not, I'm not trying to generalize because I know there's people who prefer OSRS that are just nice people. I don't want to invalidate your preference, but I do think there is a trend.
Yep, I'll definitely agree with that. And, you know, I think ultimately it comes from the fact that they feel their game was just scooped up and moved away from them when EOC came out. And they had a chance to get that game back with that poll that brought Old School back. And I think if I was a member of that community, I would feel that, aha, they're putting a poll out. So that means we were right. We're the true RS community, and those guys are a bunch of imposters.
Mm-hmm.
So that's I think, the way we'll go on that one. And thirdly, if you could copy and paste your RS character over, would you do it? No.
Hell no.
No. I like all the modern quality of life changes and the graphical stuff that we have on RS3. RS3 is great. It just looks so nice, you know. So, and it just feels so much more developed than RuneScape did back then. I don't think I could go back, not only because of the content, but just because of quality of life stuff.
It's a dated game. It's like the only reason to play is this nostalgia. And then
if I want nostalgia, I'll play RS Classic.
And then, yeah, it's like, it's the same as booting up any really old game. At the beginning, you're like, oh, these good old days. And then you realize how far game development has come since then, and you never look back.
Yep. Alrighty. Thank you, Thieves. I assume you have experience with the whole ex-girlfriend thing since you mentioned that. Alrighty, next one from Wiley. You want to take this one?
Oh, sure. Hey guys, Wiley here. Do you think that with the mining and smithing rework, the new tier 90 pickaxes should be inline damage-wise to other smithed tier 90s? Who's your favorite boss lore-wise? And do you think that Bactrian camels are a viable farm animal?
I think they will have to be. In line with the other tier 90s, because that's the way it's always worked. And if they change that, I mean, that would just be a bit of an odd change to make. I think the only other option they could do would be make it so you can't use the pickaxes in combat then.
I would actually prefer the latter. So right now it's really weird, but like, let's say you have a dragon pickaxe, right? And let's say you're really into woodcutting and you get like to the level that you can use a dragon pickaxe, like before you even get close to the attack requirement to wield it, you can't wield it. It's really weird, but you always have to keep it in your inventory. And while I sure you can use a pickaxe as a weapon,
that's how Trotsky was killed, you know? That's how Trotsky was killed. He got impaled by a pickaxe in Mexico.
Well, sure, but like that was probably made out of steel then, and not
that's
out
right.
of dragon. So, I mean, I would probably prefer if they just make the wield requirement unrelated to your attack requirement, just link it to your skill and make it the equivalent of, like, I don't know, a bronze weapon. I don't know, whatever. Iron. I think you can wear iron these days at level 1 or something, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
but it's a thing you use for mining. It's if you get a tier 90 pickaxe, you get it for mining. You don't get it because you want a tier 90 weapon, and tier 90 weapon in a game are really, really expensive right now. And
that's actually a very good point.
You can't just put a pickaxe there. So
I think they're gonna have to be non wieldable then, or at least non combatable.
I think they should be wieldable, but they should completely drop the attack requirement of all the pickaxes and just make them into
mining implements.
Yeah.
Alrighty. Favorite boss lore wise?
That's a tough one actually. I'm really excited about the Virago quest coming up because I think that's a really interesting character. At least I think there's a lot of potential for it, but there's not a lot of lore about that in the game as of now. So maybe it's not warranted as a choice. So, I think it would be Nex.
All right. Yeah, that makes sense. That's fair. Lots of interesting stuff with Nex and the God War stuff as well. So, All right, that's a good one. You know, I don't know. This is a hard choice. I'm bouncing back and forth between two. Do you know who they are?
Probably Queen Black Dragon is one of them.
Yeah. You know who the other one is?
No.
Nomad.
Ah.
I figure quest bosses are okay. Because those have a good amount of lore behind them. And we saw a huge amount of lore with Nomad's Elegy and Nomad's Requiem and all the plans Nomad had. I found that very interesting. At the same time, the Queen Black Dragon is there, you know, just because of the whole Dragonkin stuff. And I think that's still, you know, I feel that that's kind of a chapter that really wasn't closed off that well after that one quest last year, if you know what I'm talking about. Because, I mean, are the Dragonkin upset right now? Like, we really didn't get any answers from that now, did we?
Nope, we did not. Oh, gosh. Why did you remind me of that quest?
Are we still in a no-spoilers phase for that quest?
I don't know.
Well, we're talking about Sliske's endgame. So... I don't know why I had to bring that up. I'm troubled now as well. So let's just move on to the last part of this question. Bactrian camels, a viable farm animal. You know, we had to look this up because camels and farm animal isn't something you hear every day. So is this a RuneScape-related question? Maybe. But apparently if this was real life, that would be... you know, something that actually has happened before. So.
Yeah, so apparently the U.S. camel cavalry was not a big success. That's what we found out.
Yeah, and they imported them actually from the U.S., right?
To the U.S. They used them as pack animals, though, not as farm animals. But yeah, that didn't work out, and then the U.S. Civil War happened, so that never really turned out
anything. And they used them for camel milk.
But if you find a group of wild camels in the U.S., this is why they were just imported as pack animals, but they were not set loose.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't know what that would look like if you set a bunch of camels loose in the U.S. There's lots of other huge animals like that might cause problems. And temperatures, too. So you got to remember, half the U.S. gets really cold in the winter. So.
Yeah.
All right.
Would there be a viable farm animal? I don't know what you would farm them for, though. Like the milk, I guess?
Or their fur?
I don't know. Camel cheese.
Oh, God.
No. No.
No, don't. I don't want to go there. I don't want to go there. Anyways, I think we're going to have to go with no based on that, because it was already tried, right?
Well, not as farm animal, pack animal. That's a different thing.
Okay.
That's like the same as... comparing the pack yak with the yaks on what's the island? Nate is not.
Let's
see. Different.
Camel meat. Apparently, it's used for camel meat.
Or comparing your like storage pig with pigs for bacon.
Oh yeah, there you go.
That's different.
Like, doesn't
I think the bacon use would be.
Yeah, does it make sense to use a camel for meat, though? They live 40 years. Very interesting and head-scratching question there, Wiley. Thank you for that one. I mean, it looks like they could be used for fur. But all right. Yeah. Ready for tech news?
Ready for tech news.
All right. So if you want to send questions in, head on over to update.rsbnb.com/ask or email questions@rsbnb.com. And we also do have the Google Voice number where you can send text messages or leave voicemails to 571-57BNB, which is 571-572-2632. We look forward to hearing from you guys' questions next week about old school RS and related things to real life, specifically, what Thieves said. Is it like seeing your ex-girlfriend has become considerably hotter and therefore you hate her more? So, yeah, those are the kind of things we take questions for, and Parnassius' discussion question. If you guys want to continue that discussion, send stuff in about the idea of where we might look to get lore in-game that isn't necessarily from combat drops. Definitely something we want to keep talking about here. Alrighty, so some Apple news this week. This week, Apple has announced a new 9.7-inch iPad to replace the iPad Air 2. This starts at $329. It's also worth noting here that we do have the iPad Pro still at 9.7-inch, so that's an upper-end model compared to this one. And this new 9.7-inch iPad replaces the iPad Air 2. Starts with $329 with 32 gigs of storage.
It's bigger then.
Yes, a lot bigger in terms of storage.
No, but also in size?
No, they're all 9.7 inches.
Oh, even the Air 2. Because I have the Air 2, and I think it's a nice form factor.
Yeah, it is. You know, they really got that down by shrinking the size of the bezels and whatnot on those. So it works. You know, the main difference between the Pro and the, I guess they're just calling it the 9.7-inch iPad now, is that the Pro has four speakers and a faster CPU. And see, that's the problem. You don't know what the new iPad is called. Like, I guess it's just the iPad, because the iPad Pro, and then there's the iPad Mini. So, and then they dropped the Air title. It's always so confusing when Apple updates their products and their names on the mobile side. Mm-hmm. They also unveiled the Product Red iPhone. That's the brand that goes towards AIDS research. It's going to be available in 128 gig and 256 gig versions for the price of $749 and $849, and $869 and $969 for the iPhone 7 Plus versions. Of course, these are American prices, and if you are anywhere else, this will be a lot more expensive.
Is the Red iPhone available worldwide then?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the iPhone SE also gets a storage increase. Prices are remaining the same, and specs are remaining the same inside. So that starts at 32 gigs now.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah, that's a nice size.
This is then sort of like an intermediate update, because we're expecting the iPhone 8 in like later this year, right?
Right. And they'll probably update the hardware of the SE next spring, I guess, because this hardware in the SE is practically an iPhone 6S still. So it's about 2 years old, but it's still fast enough for most things, I'd imagine. And I mean, anytime you want an iPhone, a smaller iPhone factor and huge amount of storage, for $500 US, you can get 128 gigs of storage on an iPhone SE.
I would consider that.
Right? Now, if only they would update the specs to it, I think that would be a very compelling device going forward, because they're a little bit old.
Especially because there's not a lot of competition in like the high-end
In the high-end, small
at that form
phone
factor.
Form factor, right. Yeah. I mean, I've used an iPhone SE compared to an iPhone 7, and it just feels so much more natural, right? So.
Yeah, I mean, I currently have a bit of a bigger phone. I'm using the Pixel right now, and it's, I don't know, it's nice, but I don't know.
Yeah. So this was the Apple update that was expected. I guess it's a good time to buy an iPad or a Red iPhone if you're looking at it, though I don't know if you would pay that much for a Red iPhone given the other options that are available. So, alrighty, next piece of tech news is that AT&T and Verizon pull their ads from Google over extremist videos. So AT&T and Verizon pulled their ads from YouTube and other sites that run Google ads after it was revealed that some of the ads appeared next to extremist videos on YouTube. They said the following: "We are deeply concerned that our ads may have appeared alongside YouTube content promoting terrorism and hate, an AT&T spokesperson told Business Insider. Until Google can ensure this won't happen again, we are removing our ads from Google's non-search platforms. Google's chief business officer, Philip Schindler, promised in a blog post this week to provide advertisers with more ways to control what content their ads appear against.
This feels like one of these cases that Google just can't get it right. Like, if they block too much stuff, or like block the ads on too much stuff, they get like set. They censor things. If they don't do it enough, the advertisers pull their ads. Like, what's right. The right balance here? I struggle to see where this has to go. Like, how can there be a solution to this if every move they make seems to be extreme?
And you know what the problem is, I think? I think it comes down to a technical issue, because this is on YouTube primarily, and we're still early days of being able to identify a video algorithmically of what mm-hmm. is a good, happy video versus what is a hateful terrorist video, right? It's not an easy thing to do. And there's so much stuff uploaded to YouTube that there's no way they're going to be able to flag all of these, you know, on an individual basis. So
yeah,
there's bound to be mistakes.
You make a good point. Like, even if the technology would now be at a point that we can sort of recognize the type of content in a video, it would go wrong at times, and that would also be a problem. Like, then it would either miss stuff or flag too much, and it's like, it sort of feels that the only way to solve this is by doing this exactly perfectly right. And that is technically
impossible right now. Yeah. And the only
yeah.
other way is to employ an army of people to go through every video uploaded to YouTube. And there's 400 minutes of YouTube video uploaded every minute. So that's not happening.
No.
So, I mean, definitely, it's a very hard decision. And I think YouTube as a whole is feeling for this, because, you know, recently YouTube enabled their new restricted content mode. And, you know, I enabled it just to see what it would do. And to some of the channels I frequent, it completely guts them a video, even though there's no swearing or anything remotely offensive in them. So,
yeah, that's...
I mean, algorithms are doing an okay job, but they aren't the best way of doing these things, and there's really no other better way of doing it right now.
Yeah, so the restricted mode caused some like upheaval, and the response of that was basically, we were wrong, we are sorry, we're going to fix
yeah.
it, and that is the right response, by the way. I think companies don't say sorry often enough, so... Like, that being said, I mean, it should be fixed, but I think this is the same thing. It's just, like, I don't know. I get the standpoint of both AT&T and Verizon and Google on this. Like, Google is not going to like this and they want to fix this, but it's not magic. You can't just
exactly.
fix this.
And
not
that's
that they put ads next to terrorist videos on purpose.
Right,
that
and that's
would...
something lots of people don't get.
What I'm hoping is that AT&T and Verizon are not being that stubborn, like, we're just gonna pull our ads. I hope they are willing to stay in a conversation with Google and come up with a solution that works for both of them. I think that would be the best for everybody here, and I think we have to realize we are really still on like the frontier of technology. We haven't figured all this stuff out yet. It's new. And we have to just take these issues as they come along.
Yeah. And, you know, if anything, everything that comes from this, it really just shows that Google is willing to reconsider on this. Because like you said, they admitted problems on the restricted mode were a mistake, which is great, because otherwise it looks like they're censoring. And, you know, it's not within Google's core mission message to do that. So I'm glad they are doing that. And it's going to take some time, but there's, I guess, going to be problems like this.
I mean, this week it's Google. Like, other weeks it's Facebook.
Other weeks it's Twitter.
Twitter, yeah. So, like, these issues are not unique to one company.
Like, another tech news story we could have went with, Twitter announced that upwards of 15% of their user base is bots.
Yeah. try figuring that out. Bots are getting smarter and probably smarter faster than that bot detection gets smarter.
Yep.
That's the issue we faced in RuneScape for many, many years.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's problems, and things like that are going to take a while to go through. And I think the important thing that you have highlighted here is that knee-jerk reactions aren't the way to do this, because YouTube knows what's going on, Google knows what's going on, and like you said, there's been concern about this from all sides. So.
Yeah, and I think that's, like, let's all be reasonable. I think that's the most, like, it's so easy to blow this up, and media sort of thrives on blowing this up, of course.
Yep.
I mean, like, making this a big deal is good for media sites and for nobody else.
And that is, you know, that, just to take a minute here, that is entirely what news has become in the modern era. It's so sensationalist, so biased, that you almost need another way of cutting through that.
And yeah, it is true. Like, I just ask every viewer, like, just think about it for 1 second. Who thrives on making a big deal out of this whole thing?
The news media.
I mean, I'm all for transparency, and sure, this should be shared with people. I think it's good that people can make, like, form their opinions on this. But it's really only news websites that earn money through this. So
that's why I use an ad blocker on all news websites now.
Yeah, my ad blocker is becoming less and less effective over time. So
uBlock Origin. Highly recommend it if you haven't looked at it. Mm-hmm. All right, so our next tech news story is also Google-related. Another Google problem that people are taking out of severe context here. So basically, Google Home, which is Google's AI home assistant product, played an ad. And I think I can play the ad right now and you guys will hear it.
Okay, Google. What's my day like?
Hello, Bryson. The time is 7:44 a.m. The weather in Park Ridge currently is 21 degrees and sunny, with a high of 37 degrees. Your commute to work is currently 39 minutes by public transit. By the way, Disney's live-action Beauty and the Beast opens today.
Yay!
This version of the story, Belle is the inventor instead of Maurice. That rings truer if you ask me. For some more movie fun, ask me to tell you something about Belle. Have a good one. Here's the latest news from NPR News Summary at 7 a.m. today.
And there we go. That just kind of slipped its way in. So, What happened here?
So, based on what Google says, is that they just put it in to give the user more information that is, like, that applies to the current time frame. That is sort of
like what's happening in the world, right?
Yes. So it's sort of like, hey, did you know that? That is not how it was perceived by users. It was more like, I mean, listen to it. It feels like an advertisement.
Yeah, it does. And it doesn't even say where to go to see this movie or where to go to purchase tickets or ask you if you want to purchase tickets, right?
Yeah, so people were like, hey, what's this? This is coming out of nowhere. This sounds like an ad. Am I all of a sudden going to get advertisements on the product I paid for? Because, like, the home is a paid product. Like, there was never an indication. There was never an indication that it would be littered with advertisements. It's not like it's the internet.
Yeah. And I mean, it certainly feels like an ad, but it doesn't appear to be that way, does it, after looking into it? And, you know, this is once again the media talking about this, and, you know, they're calling them ads, and Google says they aren't really ads. So I guess it just comes down to what you said, informing people about what's going on. But perhaps that's a problem, that Google has become so ubiquitous with the idea of ads that people automatically assume anything they're hearing on Google is an ad.
I mean, I wouldn't say that everything hearing on Google would be an ad, right? But I cannot blame people for being like, hey, this is content I didn't ask for. directly, it comes from Google. Google is known for advertisement. That's how they make their money, right? Yeah. So must be an ad. I mean, I cannot blame people for that.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Fain of thought. And I think what happened on Google's side is really, really bad judgment.
Yeah. So what happened on Google's side?
I don't know. Nobody really knows. Like, the statement seems to be that they didn't get paid to do this. It isn't even certain if Disney was involved in this, the producer of the movie.
A source familiar with the partnership has since confirmed to Business Insider that Disney did not pay for Google's film mention. So.
Yeah. So
Also, the Google CEO, Sundar Pichai, was announced multiple times by analysts on the company's last earnings call about how he plans to monetize voice for his products like Google Home. He didn't have a clear answer, sticking to his comments that refrain, it's still early days for the technology. He also said the voice is only one mode to control computers, and users will have many ways to interact with the Google products. So, obviously, it's clearly not an ad from Google's side. I think we ought to trust Google on this end that, you know, it was just informing people what was happening, right?
I think it was done with good intention. I think this really was a case of bad judgment. And, I mean, it happens. And
like you said, it's early days. This is brand new technology. And, hey, I mean, if Siri could do all that, I would be absolutely happy with that, but Siri's pretty dumb right now. So Google's got a good product.
And the question is, like, people ask, like, how are you going to monetize the platform? The question is, does it have to be, because the Home is already a paid product? But I guess that is something that has to develop over time. And I mean, they have figured out how to monetize Google Search, so I'm pretty sure they can figure something out here.
Yep. All right, so once again, we're just putting out a few fires there for people who thought the world was coming down with this, but it's looking like it's an honest mistake by Google.
Yeah.
All righty then, on to other things we go for the Skill of the Month update in our Thieving Skill of the Month. Jamandy52 currently has 46 million XP gained, a huge, huge lead of 33 million XP over number 2, which is Undoer with just over 13 million XP gained. And third place is Parnassius with 12.8 million experience gained. So as we're looking towards the end of the month, it certainly looks like Jamandy has this one wrapped up, unless Undoer decides to pull some serious no-lifing over the next week and a bit. So we'll be very interesting to see what happens.
It's going to be a very, very close race to like second place. Oh, yeah. Maybe even third place.
We'll see. We'll see if they continue.
That looks really fun.
Yeah. And we will have a way of rewarding all you guys at the end of the year who come in second or third or fourth or manage to do well in skill months without winning. All right. I believe we have some achievements of the week. Would you care to get us started?
There's only a few. Yes. Okay. Let's start with March 22. Garden Chick got 120 attack. Giovannic got 99 thieving. Warrock got 99 herb lore. Garden Chick also got 120 defense. Snow Queen 303 got 99 thieving. And that's all for March 22. So then we move on to March 21, where Jamandy 52 got 120 thieving. Go figure. Sion got 99 farming, and Warwick got 99 prayer. And then we move on to March 20, where Wolfie got 99 farming, 99 smithing, and 99 slayer. Tennis 79 got 120 dungeoneering, and Warwick got 99 agility.
Alrighty, now on the 19th of March, Warrock got 99 runecrafting, Sion 99 slayer. Now on to the 18th we go. Faxi with 99 fletching. Sirion, who's on the podcast right now, got 99 invention. Grimy Tossels, 99 invention on the 18th as well. And then on the 17th, we have Chara Lambo 7 with 99 magic. Grimy Tossels with 99 fire making. Dorpaneo with 120 fishing. Grimy Tossels again with 99 attack. And Simbakura with 99 ranged on the 16th. congratulations, everyone.
Some good achievements.
Yeah,
in
yours are in there too. That was also your maxing day.
That was my maxing day. I now have my max cape, which feels a bit weird, to be honest.
You'll get to hold it until a new skill comes out, so that's good.
That's going to take a while, so I'm happy.
Yeah. We'll talk a bit about that after. But first, I do have a pick of the week for everyone. And this one is something that I've taken an interest in recently. And, you know, there was a time back when the iPhone first came out that there was some question if there was ever going to be an app store. Specifically, Steve Jobs was once famously quoted as saying, "You don't need an app store, just do everything in the web browser." And we're finally getting to that point where you don't really need a web browser to do simple apps. You know, if you want hardware acceleration and if you want to access the full suite of hardware, you probably do need a web browser. But you can do an alarmingly amount of good stuff in a web browser today to create what looks like a very native app. So this app is called Paper Planes. You can find it at paperplanes.world. All you need to do is open it up in your smartphone browser and add it to your home screen, which is easy to do on iOS. You just click the share button and add to home screen. I'm not sure how you do that on Android.
I can check that right now for you. Give me 1 second.
Sure. So basically what you do with this app is you fold up a paper plane and give it a stamp of where you are. And then after you fold it up, you can throw it out. And it goes flying across the world. And then other users of this app can catch your paper planes. And then they can put a stamp on them and send them out again. So it's a collaborative paper plane experiment, mainly just to show what can be done in a web browser for a native application. Or sorry, for a web browser-based application these days. So
on Android, when you go to a website, it actually pops up a thing and says, "Do you want to add it to home screen?" So it's really simple.
Okay, good. And then there's also an option to see all the other planes that you sent out. So I sent out a plane on February 17th that has been caught 3 times by people in various other countries. It's flown 6,465 miles. I'm not sure what country code UA is, but it's there.
Ukraine, I think.
UA is Ukraine. Interesting. All right. So it's been to Ukraine, Switzerland, and Moscow, all caught by various people, then thrown back out. So I can basically then use my phone and make a animation that I'm catching a paper plane with a net, open it up, stamp it, and then I basically caught one from Hawaii, Germany, Russia, and Maryland in the U.S., and then stamp it again, send it out, and throw it out. And this is basically what this app does. It lets you send paper planes across the world and share them with people. It doesn't really do that much, but it shows what can be done in a modern smartphone web browser for games. So a fun little technology demo and a fun little way of seeing other users who are playing this game around the world. So you can find that at paperplanes.world.
Like this way of serving applications is going to really take off, and maybe whether in a few years we won't have any native apps at all anymore and everything is served through the browser. That would be really interesting, and it would be really interesting to see how that's going to work with like paid apps and app stores and that kind of stuff. So
yeah. And
it's super exciting.
You know, the technology world is always looking for the next innovation and whatnot. And same thing goes for programmers who toil in JavaScript and whatnot on the web. So this has led to a resurgence of web apps, and they've been calling themselves progressive web apps because they employ characteristics that allow them to act like a normal application on your phone. And, you know, the Android platform is actually ahead of iOS on this because the iOS web browser doesn't let you access as many of the internal features as the Android browser does, believe it or not, and it doesn't provide for as great of an experience. So that's an interesting side. So Apple is actually holding back these web apps compared to other technology players out there. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens with iOS 11 and the next version of Android on the web browser for this kind of stuff. So kind of looking forward to seeing that. But once again, you can find that at paperplanes.world. All right. what have you been up to this week?
Something with like maxing, I think. Yeah. No. So last weekend I had my max party, so that was really fun. I mean, my account is like, I don't know, 12 years old or something. So it's a really weird sensation in finally getting all your skills 99. But that was good. I enjoyed myself. Did some fashion scaping on my cape.
Nice. What colors did you go with?
I always liked the look I had with like my fire making capes, like orange yellowy. So I went with black and orange. I really like the combination of colors. And it gives me a chance to like move away from like the white and blue quest cape look right. I've had for a long, long while. So we'll see how long I stick with it. Maybe until I get like the master quest cape in like another dozen years. But yeah, ever since then, I've been sort of like trying to look for new content to play. And what I really want to do is go to that way of playing where I just log in and just do whatever I feel like. I sort of forfeit all the goals. Right. And believe it or not, that's what I have sort of been doing before getting the max cape as well. Like, it took me forever for a reason. I just want to do things that I enjoy doing, and that's what I keep doing. But I will probably want to get 150 dungeoneering for the resource
150 dungeoneering.
Hmm?
You said 150 dungeon.
115 dungeoneering.
Oh, okay. It sounded like 150.
No, not quite that extreme. And then, of course, to 120 when I did that. But yeah, like, I'm also really close to Taskmaster. I'll probably start ticking off things from like the Master Quest Cape requirements. Just using out a list of things I can do instead of lists I have to do. So that's sort of my approach here. Like, I look and be like, hey, that's something I could do today, and let's do that.
Yeah, and that's something I always say to people is don't let the game control you. Don't see this huge list of things that are dailies and assume you have to do them. You know, just use that as a list of things you can do when you log in, and, you know, enjoy them. And if you're not enjoying them, don't do them.
I mean, that's the good thing about maxing. I mean, I was really close to maxing anyway, so I had a lot of choice. But you can turn off dailies when you get 99 in that skill, or in case of dungeoneering, you have to be 120 to turn them off, I think. But like, That sort of allows you to turn off dailies you won't do anyway, and that way you sort of get content you like doing, and you get to pick and choose whatever you want to, and it makes for a really relaxed and fun experience. And that way RuneScape has sort of turned into my game that I can come home from work every evening and just boot it up and like use it for like 15-20 minutes to just de-stress and be relaxed and have talk to people I know, and that's been a really good experience.
That's really good. Yeah. And that's what it really should be for, so I'm glad that you're doing that.
Yeah, I mean, I never really liked the whole grindy stuff. I had to sort of limit that to weekends where I just had a lot of time to burn on that, but even then, like, it didn't go that fast because I'm an impatient person, so.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. That sounds good. Anything else you'd like to share?
No, not really. If you ever like want to do like a dungeon or like a sinkhole, like, just feel free to PM me if I'm online. I'm always up for that.
All right, sounds good. As for me this week on RS, I decided that I was going to get an attuned crystal teleport seed. And you know, not what? What? What?
All the harmonic. What is it?
Harmonic dust? 4,000 of them.
Wow.
And it's not because I don't want to charge teleport seeds up. It's because for farming, I don't want to be rifling through my bank to be putting the crystal teleport seeds back into the right spot. So I just want to be able to choose my farming equipment and off I go and not worry about how many charges are on the crystal seed. Because I got my ectophile, my cape, my wilderness sword, and now the crystal teleport seed all lined up, ready to go. I just click a few times, pick up some herb seeds, and off I go for the herb farming run. So that definitely helps not having to use the lodestone and whatnot and run around. So overall, I think it's a good thing that I picked up, and, you know, I'm glad they brought that into game last week. So that's what I did. I also did some herb lore, progressing somewhat slowly on my 120 herb lore goal with the prayer renewal potions, making my own prayer potions and purchasing the prayer renewal potions, just because I think it's easier to farm Ranners and get Snapegrass than it is to farm Felstock and get Morcello mushrooms. So that's what I'm doing with that, and always looking for nice little shortcuts along the way. So
I just realized how I solved the issue with Elven Teleport Seeds in my run. So what I did is, in my preset, I had a Teleport Seed with like 3 charges, like which was the used to be the maximum in my preset. And then I used it to teleport to the Traharan patch, the Melee patch, and the Lita patch, which would use up the entire seed. So I would never have partially charged seeds. That doesn't work anymore. So now I'm a bit upset about the maximum charges.
Yeah, I mean, we certainly need the bank rework for that, hey?
Yeah. It just dawned on me that broke my farming preset stuff. Now I need to get that attuned C as well.
And see, I mean, it's definitely something that you can do, and it makes the presets a lot easier.
Why?
I don't know. But, you know, aside from that, not much NRS. Just the Crystal Seed and farming runs along the way. So
have you been getting your Zamorakian tokens?
Yes, unfortunately I have.
I haven't. That's how much I played.
Okay. All right. Well then, we will see you guys next week for what I assume is going to be the luck rework, since it's the last update in March. We will have a guest for that week, because that one is going to be mechanically inclined. So you guys can look forward to that.
I'm really excited about experiencing it and looking at the mechanics. So.
Yeah, and having something new for crafting as well.
Yeah. So,
should be great. All right then. Well, thank you everyone for sharing your time with us, and we'll see you next week for another episode of RSBNB Update.
Bye.